frightened him. Ciri felt a stab of terror, backing away. Sounds of fighting came from behind her, but she was too focused on the lifeless stepping around Blue Fingers toward her and Sesebron. The God King cried out, a tongueless, wordless groan of anger. And then the priests were there. They threw themselves in front of the lifeless, trying to beat them back, trying desperately to protect their God King. Ciri clung to her husband in the ruddy room, watching as the priests were slaughtered by emotionless warriors with gray faces. Priest after priest jumped in the way, some with weapons, others simply waving their arms in a hopeless attack. She saw Trelides grit his teeth, terror showing in his eyes as he ran forward, trying to attack a lifeless. He died like the others. His secrets died with him. The lifeless stepped over the corpses. Sesebron pushed Ciri behind him, arms shaking as he backed them toward a wall, facing down the bloodied monsters. The lifeless finally stopped, and Blue Fingers walked around them, looking past Sesebron toward her.
"And now, vessel, I believe we were going somewhere."
"I'm sorry, miss," the guard said, holding up a hand. "All access to the Court of Gods is forbidden." Vivenna ground her teeth. "This is unacceptable," she said. "I'm to report to the Goddess Allmother at once. Can't you see how many breaths I hold? I'm not someone you can just turn away." The guards remained firm. There were a good 24 of them at the gates, stopping anyone who tried to enter. Vivenna turned away. Whatever Vasher had done inside the night before, he'd apparently caused quite a stir. People clustered around the gateway to the court, demanding answers, asking if something was wrong. Vivenna made her way back through them, leaving the gates behind.
"Go to the side," Nightblood said. "Vasher never asks if he can enter. He just goes in."
Vivenna glanced at the side of the plateau. There was a short, rocky ledge running around the outside of the wall, with the guard so distracted by the people wanting in. She slipped to the side. It was early in the morning yet, the sun not having crested the eastern mountains. There were guards on the wall above. She could feel them with her life sense, but she was below their angle of view as long as they looked outward. She might be able to sneak by them. She waited until one patrol had passed, then awakened one of the tapestries.
"Lift me,"
she said, dropping a drained handkerchief. The tapestry twisted into the air, wrapping around her, the top end still attached to the wall. Like a muscular arm, it lifted her up, twisting and depositing her atop the wall. She glanced around, recovering her breath. To the side, some distance away, a group of guards was pointing at her.
"You're not any better at this than Vasher is," Nightblood noted. "You people can't sneak at all. Yesteel would be so disappointed with you."
She cursed, awakened the tapestry again, and had it lower her into the court. She recovered her breath, then took off running across the grassy lawn. Few people were about, but that only made her stand out even more.
"The palace," Nightblood said. "Go there."
That was where she was going. However, the longer she held the sword, the more she understood that it said whatever came to its steely mind, whether or not its comments were relevant. It was like a child, speaking or asking questions without inhibition. The front of the palace was very well guarded by a group of men who weren't wearing uniforms.
"He's in there," Nightblood said. "I can feel him. 3rd floor, where he and I were before."
Vivenna got an image of the room shoved into her head. She frowned. "Remarkably useful," she thought, "for an evil weapon of destruction."
"I'm not evil," Nightblood said, voice not defensive, simply informative, as if reminding her of something she'd forgotten. "I destroy evil. I think maybe we should destroy those men up ahead. They look evil. You should pull me out."
For some reason, she doubted that would be a good idea.
"Come on," Nightblood said.
The soldiers were pointing at her. She glanced behind,
and saw others rushing across the lawn.
Astra, forgive me, she thought. Then, gritting her teeth, she threw Nightblood, blanket and all, toward the guards in front of the building. They halted. To a man, they looked down at the sword as it rolled free of the blanket, silver sheath glistening on the lawn.
Well, I guess this works too, Nightblood noted, voice feeling distant now.
One of the soldiers picked up the sword.
Vivenna dashed past them, ignored by the soldiers. They started to fight.
Can't go that way, she thought, eyeing the front entrance, not wanting to risk pushing her way through fighting men.
So instead she ran to the side of the massive palace. The lower levels were made of the step-like black blocks that gave the palace its pyramid-like quality. Above these, it grew into a more traditional fortress with steep walls. There were windows, if she could reach them. She twitched her fingers, making the tassels on her sleeves clench and unclench. Then she jumped, her awakened leggings tossing her up a few extra feet. She reached up and made the tassels grab the edge of the large black block. The tassels just barely held, gripping the stone like foot-long fingers. With difficulty, Vivenna pulled herself up onto the block. Men yelled and screamed below, and she spared them a glance. The guard who had grabbed Nightblood was fighting off the others, a small trail of black smoke swirling around him. As she watched, he backed into the palace itself, the other men following him.
So much evil, Nightblood said, like a woman tisking as she cleaned cobwebs from her ceiling.
Vivenna turned away, feeling slightly guilty for giving the sword to the men. She jumped up and pulled herself onto the next block, continuing as the soldiers who had seen her from the walls arrived. They wore the colors of the city guard, and while a couple of them got caught up in the Nightblood fight, most of them ignored it. Vivenna continued.
To the right, Nightblood said distantly. That window on the third floor, two over. He's in there.
As his voice faded, Vivenna looked up at the window indicated. She still had to climb up a number of blocks, then somehow reach a window that was an entire story up a sheer wall. There did appear to be some decorative stonework that could serve as handholds, but she grew dizzy even thinking about climbing them. An arrow snapped against the stone beside her, making her jump. Several guards below had bows.
Colors, she thought, pulling herself up to the next block.
She heard a whoosh behind her and cringed, feeling as if she should have been struck, but nothing happened. She pulled herself up onto the block, then twisted around. She could just barely see a corner of her cloak holding an arrow. She started, grateful that she had awakened it. It dropped the arrow, then returned to normal.
Handy, that, she thought, climbing up the last block.
By the time she got to the top of it, her arms were sore. Fortunately, her awakened fingers were still gripping as well as ever. She took a deep breath, then began to climb straight up the upper wall of the Black Fortress, using the carvings as handholds, and decided, for her own sanity, that she'd better avoid looking down.
Lightsong stared ahead. Too much information. Too much was happening. Blushweaver's murder, then Larimar's revelation. The betrayal of the God King's priests, all in such quick succession.
He sat in his cell, arms wrapped around himself, gold and red robes dirtied from crawling through the tunnel, then sitting in his cage. His thigh ached from where it had been struck with a sword, though the wound hadn't been bad, and it was barely bleeding anymore. He ignored the pain. It was insignificant compared to the pain inside. The priests talked quietly on the far side of the room. Oddly, as he glanced at them, something caught his eye. He let his mind be diverted by the realization. He finally grasped what was bothering him about them. He should have seen it earlier. It had to do with color. Not the color of their clothing, but the color of their faces. It was just slightly off. The deviation in one man would have been easy to ignore, but all of them together was a pattern. No regular person could have noticed it. To a man with his heightenings, it was obvious once he knew what to look for. These men were not from Hallandron. Anyone can wear a set of robes, he realized. That doesn't mean that they're priests. In fact, judging by the faces, he realized the men must be from Pan Kal. And then it all made sense to him. That quickly. They'd all been played for fools.
Blue Fingers, Ciri demanded, talk to me. What are you going to do with us?
The labyrinth of the God King's palace was complex, and it was sometimes difficult even now for her to find her way around. They'd traveled down a stairwell, but now were going up another one. Blue Fingers didn't answer. He walked with his customary nervousness, wringing his hands. The fighting in the hallways seemed to be decreasing. In fact, once they left the stairwell, this newest hallway was dreadfully quiet. Ciri walked with Sesebron's nervous arm around her waist. She didn't know what he was thinking. They hadn't been able to pause long enough for him to write anything. He gave her a comforting smile, but she knew that this all must be just as terrifying for him as it was for her. Probably more so.
You can't do this, Blue Fingers, Ciri said, snapping at the little balding man.
It is the only way we'd ever be able to break free, Bluefinger said, not turning, but finally responding to her.
But you can't, Ciri said. The Idrians are innocent.
Bluefinger shook his head.
How many of my people would you sacrifice if it would mean freedom for yours?
None, she said.
I should like to see you say that if our positions were reversed,
he said, still not meeting her eyes.
I'm sorry for your pain, but your people are not innocent. They're just like the Hallandron. In the Many War, you rolled over us, made us your workers and slaves. Only at the end, when the royal family fled, did Idris and Hallandron split.
Please, Ciri said.
Sesebron suddenly punched a lifeless. The God King growled, struggling as he kicked at another. There were dozens of them. He looked at her, waving a hand, motioning for her to flee. She didn't intend to leave him. Instead, she tried to grab Blue Fingers, but a lifeless was too quick. It took her arm, holding her firm, even when she batted at it. A couple of men wearing the robes of Sesebron's priesthood came out of a stairwell ahead of them, carrying lanterns. Ciri, looking closely, immediately recognized them as being from Pan Kal. They were too short, and their skin color was just slightly off.
I've been a fool, she thought.
Blue Fingers had played the game so well. He'd driven a wedge between her and the priests from the start. Most of her fears and worries she'd gotten from him, and it had been reinforced by the priest's arrogance. All part of the scribe's plan to someday use her to gain freedom for his people.
We have Lightsong's security phrase, one of the new men said to Blue Fingers. We have checked it, and it works. We changed it to the new one. The rest of the lifeless are ours.
Ciri glanced to the side. The lifeless had pulled Sesebron to the ground. He yelled, though it came out more as a moan. Ciri yanked, trying to escape her lifeless and help him. She began to cry. To the side, Blue Fingers nodded to his accomplices, looking fatigued.
Very well. Give the command. Order the lifeless to march on Idris.
It will be done,
the man said, laying a hand on Blue Fingers' shoulder. Blue Fingers nodded, looking morose as the others withdrew.
What do you have to be sad about? She spat.
Blue Fingers turned toward her.
My friends now are the only ones who know the command phrases for Hallandrin's lifeless army. Once those lifeless leave for Idris, with orders to destroy everything they find there, my friends will kill themselves with poison. There won't be anyone who can stop the creatures.
Astra, Ciri thought, feeling numb. Lord of colors.
Take the God King below, Bluefinger said, waving to several lifeless. Hold him until it is time.
They were joined by a Pancall scribe wearing fake priest's robes as they towed Sesebron toward the stairwell. Ciri reached for him. He continued to struggle, reaching back, but the lifeless were too strong. She listened to his inarticulate yells echoing down the stairwell.
What will you do with him?
Ciri asked, tears cold on her cheeks. Bluefingers glanced at her, but once again would not meet her eyes.
There will be many in the Halandrin government who see the lifeless attack as a political mistake, and they may seek to stop the war. Unless Halandrin actually commits itself to this fight, our sacrifice will be useless.
I don't understand.
We will take the bodies of Lightsong and Blushweaver, the two gods with the command phrases, and leave them in the lifeless barracks, surrounded by dead Idrians we took from the city. Then we will leave the corpse of the God King to be discovered in the palace dungeons. Those who investigate will assume that Idrian assassins attacked and killed him. We've hired enough mercenaries from the Idrian slums that it shouldn't be too difficult to believe. Those of my scribes who survive the night will confirm the story.
Ciri blinked out tears. Everyone will assume that Blushweaver and Lightsong sent the armies as retribution for the death of the God King, she thought. And with the king dead, the people will be furious.
I wish you hadn't gotten involved in all of this, Bluefinger said, motioning for her lifeless captors to pull her along. It would have been easier for me if you'd been able to keep yourself from getting pregnant.
I'm not, she said.
The people think you are, he said with a sigh as they walked toward the stairwell. And that's enough. We have to break this government, and we have to make the Idrians angry enough to want to destroy the Halandrin. I think your people will do better in this war than everyone says, especially if the lifeless march without leadership. Your people will ambush them, making sure this is not an easy war for either side.
He glanced at her.
But for this war to work right, the Idrians have to want to fight. Otherwise they'll flee and vanish into those highlands. No, both sides have to hate each other. Pull as many allies into the battle as possible so that everyone is too distracted.
And what better way to make Idris willing to fight, she thought with horror, than to kill me? Both sides will see the death of my supposed child as an act of war. This won't simply be a fight for domination. It will be a drawn-out war of hatred. The fighting could last for decades. And nobody will ever realize that our real enemy, the one who started it all, is the peaceful, quiet province to the south of Halandrin.
Chapter 56. Vivenna hung outside the window, breathing deeply, sweating heavily. She'd peeked inside. Denth was in there, as was Tonk Fa. Vasher was hanging from a hook on the ceiling. He was bloodied, and he held no breath, but he seemed to be alive. Can I stop both Denth and Tonk Fa? She thought. Her arms were tired. She had a couple of lengths of rope in her pocket she could awaken. What if she threw and missed? She had seen Denth fight. He was faster than she'd thought possible. She would have to surprise him. And if she missed, she would die. What am I doing? She thought. Hanging from a wall, about to challenge two professional soldiers? Her recent past gave her the strength to push down her fear. They might kill her, but that would be a quick end. She'd survived betrayals, the death of a dear friend, and a time going mad from the illness, hunger, and terror of living on the streets. She'd been pushed down, forced to admit that she'd betrayed her people. There wasn't really any more they could do to her. For some reason, those thoughts gave her power. Surprised at her own determination, she quietly recovered the breath from her cloak and her leggings. She awakened a pair of rope pieces, telling them to grab when thrown. She said a quiet prayer to Ostra, then pulled herself up through the window and into the room. Vasher was groaning. Tonk Fa was dozing in the corner. Denth, holding a bloody knife, looked up immediately as she landed. The look of utter shock on his face was, in itself, almost worth everything she'd been through. She tossed the rope at him, threw the other at Tonk Fa, then dashed into the room. Denth reacted immediately, cutting the rope out of the air with his dagger. The pieces of it twisted and wriggled, but weren't long enough to grab anything. The one she threw at Tonk Fa, however, hit. He cried out, waking as it wrapped around his face and neck. Vivenna pulled to a halt beside Vasher's swinging body. Denth had his sword out. He'd pulled it free more quickly than she could track. She gulped, then pulled out her own sword, holding it forward as Vasher had taught her. Denth paused just briefly in surprise. That was enough. She swung. Not for Denth, but for the rope holding Vasher to the ceiling. He fell with a grunt, and Denth struck, slamming the point of his dueling blade through her shoulder. She fell, gasping in pain. Denth stepped back.
"Well, princess," he said,
warily holding his blade.
"I didn't expect to see you here."
Tonk Fa made a gagging sound as the rope twisted around his neck, choking him. He struggled to pull it free with little success. Once, the pain in her shoulder might have been debilitating, but after the beatings she'd taken on the street, it seemed somewhat familiar to her. She looked up and met Denth's eyes.
"Was this supposed to be a rescue?" Denth asked. "Because, honestly, I'm not very impressed."
Tonk Fa knocked over his stool in his thrashing. Denth glanced at him, then back at Vivenna. There was a moment of silence, save for Tonk Fa's weakening struggles. Finally, Denth cursed and jumped over to cut at the rope on his friend's neck.
"You all right?"
Vasher asked from beside her. She was shocked by how solid his voice sounded, despite his bloodied body. She nodded.
"They're going to send lifeless marching on your homeland," he said. "We've been wrong about this all along. I don't know who's behind it, but I think they're winning the fight for the palace."
Denth finally got the rope cut free.
"You need to run,"
Vasher said, wiggling his hands free from their rope bonds.
"Get back to your people. Tell them not to fight the lifeless. They need to flee through the northern passes, hide in the highlands. Do not fight, or bring other kingdoms into the war."
Vivenna glanced back at Denth, who was smacking Tonk Fa back to consciousness. Then she closed her eyes.
"Your breath to mine," she said,
drawing back the breath from her hand tassels, adding it to the large amount she still held from before. She reached out, placing her hand on Vasher.
"Vivenna,"
he said. "My life to yours," she said. "My breath become yours." Her world became a thing of dullness. Beside her, Vasher gasped, then began to convulse at the bestowal of breath. Denth stood up, spinning.
"You do it, Vasher," Vivenna whispered. "You'll be far better at it than I will be."
"Stubborn woman,"
Vasher said as he overcame the convulsions. He reached out, as if to restore her breath to her, but noticed Denth. Denth smiled, raising his blade. Vivenna put a hand to her shoulder, stopping the blood flow, and she began to push herself back toward the window. Though, without breath, she wasn't certain what she intended to do there. Vasher stood up, taking her sword in his hand. He wore only the bloody knee-length underbreeches, but his stance was firm. He slowly wrapped the rope he'd been hanging from around his waist, forming his characteristic belt.
How does he do it? She thought. Where does his strength come from?
I should have hurt you more, Denth said. I took my time, savoring it too much.
Vasher snorted, tying off the belt. Denth seemed to be waiting, anticipating something.
I've always found it funny that we bleed, just like ordinary men, Denth said. We might be stronger, might live much longer, but we die just the same.
Not the same,
Vasher said, raising Vivenna's blade.
Other men die with far more honor than we, Denth.
Denth smiled. Vivenna could see excitement in his eyes. He always claimed that there was no way Vasher could have beaten his friend Arsteel in a duel, she thought. He wants to fight Vasher. He wants to prove to himself that Vasher isn't as good as he is. Blades whipped into motion, and after just a quick exchange, Vivenna could see that there was no contest. Denth was clearly the better. Perhaps it was Vasher's wounds. Perhaps it was the growing anger she saw in Vasher's eyes as he fought, marring his ability to be calm and collected during the fight. Maybe he just really wasn't as good as Denth. However, as Vivenna watched, she realized that Vasher was going to lose.
I didn't do all this so you could just die, she thought, rising to try to help.
A hand fell on her shoulder, pushing her back down.
I don't think so, Tonk Fa said, looming over her. Nice trick with a rope, by the way. Very clever. I know a few tricks with ropes myself. Did you know, for instance, that a rope can be used to burn a person's flesh?
He smiled, then leaned down.
Mercenary humor, you see.
His cloak slid slightly off his shoulder, falling against her cheek.
It can't be, she thought. I escaped from him. I tried to awaken his cloak, but used a bad command. Could he have been stupid enough to keep wearing it?
She smiled, glancing over her shoulder. Vasher had backed against the far wall to the window, and he was sweating profusely, bloody drops falling to the ground. Denth forced him back again, and Vasher stepped up on the table by the far wall, seeking higher ground. She looked back at Tonk Fa, his cloak still touching her cheek.
Your breath to mine, she said.
She felt a sudden, welcoming burst of breath.
Huh?
Tonk Fa said.
Nothing, she said. Just attack and grab Denth.
Command made. Visualization made. The cloak began to quiver. Tonk Fa's shirt drained of color, and his eyes widened with surprise. The cloak suddenly whipped into the air, yanking Tonk Fa to the side and causing him to stumble away from her.
That's why I'm the princess, and you're just a mercenary, she thought with satisfaction, rolling over.
Tonk Fa cried out. Denth spun at the sound, yelling as the very large, very uncoordinated Pan Kal man crashed into him, cloak whipping about. Denth slammed backward, catching Vasher by surprise as they rammed together. Tonk Fa grunted. Denth cursed. And Vasher was shoved backward out the window. Vivenna blinked in surprise. That wasn't what she'd been intending. Denth cut away the cloak, pushing Tonk Fa back. All was silent in the room for a moment.
Go grab your squad of lifeless, Denth said. Now!
You think he'll live?
Tonk Fa asked.
He just fell out the third-story window, plummeting towards certain doom. Denth said, Of course he'll live. Send the squad to the front doors to slow him.
Denth glanced at Vivenna.
You, princess, are far more trouble than you're worth.
So people are fond of telling me, she said with a sigh, raising her bloodied hand to her shoulder again, too exhausted to be as scared as she probably should have been. Vasher fell toward the hard stone blocks below. He watched the window retreat above him.
Almost, he thought with frustration. I just about had him.
Wind whistled. He screamed in frustration, pulling free the rope at his waist, Vivenna's breath a lively strength within him.
Grab things,
he commanded, whipping the rope out, drawing color from his blood-stained shorts. They bled to gray, and the rope wrapped around an outcropping of stone on the palace wall. It pulled taut, and he ran sideways along the ebony blocks, slowing his fall.
Your breath to mine,
he yelled, as his momentum slowed. The rope dropped free, and he landed on the first block.
Become as my leg, and give it strength,
he commanded, drawing color from the blood on his chest. The rope twisted down, wrapping around his leg and foot as he leaped off. He landed on the next block, 1 foot down. The coiled rope and its strange, inhuman muscles bearing the brunt of the shock. 4 hops, and he hit the ground. A group of soldiers stood amidst some bodies at the front gates, looking confused. Vasher barreled toward them, colorless, translucent blood dropping from his skin as he drew his breath back from the rope. He scooped a sword from a fallen soldier. The men before the gates turned and readied their weapons. He didn't have the time or the patience for pleasantries. He struck, cutting men down with quick efficiency. He wasn't as good as Denth, but he had practiced for a very, very long time. Unfortunately, there were a lot of men. Maybe too many to fight. Vasher cursed, spinning between them, dropping another one. He bent down, slapping his hand against the waist of a fallen soldier, touching both shirt and pants, looping his fingers around the colored inner undershirt.
Fight for me, as if you were me,
he commanded, draining the man's undershirt completely gray. Vasher spun, blocking a sword strike. Another came from the side, and another. He couldn't block them all. A sword flashed in the air, blocking a weapon that would have hit Vasher. The dead man's shirt and trousers, having pulled themselves free, stood holding a blade. They struck, as if controlled by an invisible person inside, blocking and attacking with skill. Vasher put his back to the awakened construct. When he had a chance, he made another one, draining away his remaining breath. They fought in a trio, Vasher and his 2 sets of awakened clothing. The guards cursed, much more wary now. Vasher eyed them, planning an attack. At that moment, a troop of some 50 lifeless barreled around the corner, charging toward him.
Colors,
Vasher thought. He growled in rage, striking and taking down another soldier.
Colors, colors, colors.
You shouldn't swear, a voice said in his head. Shashara told me that was evil.
Vasher spun toward the sound. A little line of black smoke was trailing out from beneath the closed front doors of the palace.
Aren't you going to thank me?
Nightblood said.
I came to save you.
One of his sets of clothing fell, the leg cut off by a soldier's clever strike. Vasher reached back, drawing the breath back from the second set of clothing, then stepped with an unclothed toe on the fallen set, recovering the breath from it as well. The soldiers backed away, wary, more than happy to let the lifeless take him. And in that moment of peace, Vasher charged for the gates to the palace. He threw his shoulder against them, slamming them open, skidding into the entryway. A large group of men lay dead on the ground. Nightblood sprouted from one man's chest, as usual, hilt pointing toward the sky. Vasher hesitated only briefly. He could hear Lifeless charging up behind him. He ran forward and grabbed Nightblood's hilt and pulled the sword free, leaving the sheath behind in the body. The blade sprayed a wave of black liquid as he swung it. The liquid dissolved into smoke before touching walls or floor, like water in an oven. Smoke twisted, some rising from the blade, some falling in a stream to the floor, dripping like black blood.
Destroy!
Nightblood's voice boomed in his head.
The evil must be destroyed!
Pain shot up Vasher's arm, and he felt his breath being leached away, sucked into the blade, fueling its hunger. Drawing the weapon had a terrible cost. At that moment, he didn't really care. He spun toward the charging Lifeless and, enraged, attacked. Each creature he struck with the blade immediately flashed and became smoke. A single scratch, and the bodies dissolved like paper being consumed by an invisible fire, leaving behind only a large stain of blackness in the air. Vasher spun among them, striking with wrath, killing Lifeless after Lifeless. Black smoke churned around him, and his arm twisted with pain as vein-like tendrils climbed up the hilt and around his forearm. Like black blood vessels that latched onto his skin, feeding off his breath. In a matter of minutes, the breath Vivenna had given him had been reduced by half. Yet in those moments, he destroyed all 50 Lifeless. The soldiers outside pulled to a halt, watching the display. Vasher stood amidst a churning mass of deep ebony smoke. It slowly rose into the air, the only remnants of the 50 creatures he had destroyed. The soldiers ran away. Vasher screamed, charging toward the side of the room. He slammed Nightblood through a wall. The stone dissolved just as easily as flesh had, evaporating away before him. He burst through the dissipating black smoke, entering the next room. He didn't bother with the stairwell. He simply jumped onto a table and rammed Nightblood into the ceiling. A circle 10 feet wide vanished. Dark, mist-like smoke fell around him like streaks of paint. He awakened his rope again and then tossed it up, using it to pull himself up onto the next floor. A moment later, he did it again, climbing onto the third floor. He spun, slashing through walls, bellowing as he ran back toward Denth. The pain in his arm was incredible, and his breath was draining away at an alarming rate. Once it was gone, Nightblood would kill him. Everything was growing fuzzy. He slashed through a final wall, finding the room where he had been tortured. It was empty. He cried out, arm shaking,
"Destroy! Evil!"
Nightblood said in his mind, all lightness gone from the tone, all familiarity. It boomed like a command, an awful, inhuman thing. The longer Vasher held the sword, the faster it drained his breath. Gasping, he threw the sword aside and fell to his knees. It skidded, tearing a rip in the floor that puffed away into smoke. But it hit a wall with a pling and fell still. Smoke rose from the blade. Vasher knelt, arm twitching. The black veins on his skin slowly evaporated. He was left with just barely enough breath to reach the first tightening. Another few seconds, and Nightblood would have sucked the rest away. He shook his head, trying to clear his vision. Something fell to the tiled floor in front of him. A dueling blade. Vasher looked up.
"Stand up,"
Denth said, eyes hard.
"We're going to finish what we started."
Chapter 57. Bluefingers led Ciri, held by several lifeless, up to the fourth floor of the palace. The top floor. They entered a room lavishly decorated with rich colors, even for Halandrin. Lifeless guards there let them pass, bowing their heads to Bluefingers. All the lifeless in the city are controlled by Bluefingers and his scribes, she thought. But even before that, the scribes had great power over the bureaucracy and workings of the kingdom. Did the Halandrin realize that they were dooming themselves by relegating the Pon Kal people to such lowly, yet important, positions? My people will not fall for this, Ciri found herself saying as she was pulled to the front of the room. They won't fight Halandrin. They'll retreat through the passes, take refuge in the Highland Valleys or one of the Outer Kingdoms. The front of the room held a black block of stone, shaped like an altar. Ciri frowned. From behind, a group of lifeless entered the room, carrying the corpses of several priests. She saw Trelady's body among them. What? Ciri thought. Bluefingers turned toward her.
We'll make certain they're angry, he said. Trust me. When this is through, Princess, Idris will fight until either it or Halandrin is destroyed.
They tossed someone into the cell next to Lightsong. He looked up with weary eyes, uncaring. It was another returned.
Which of the gods had they taken captive now?
The God King, he thought.
Interesting.
He looked down again.
What did it matter? He'd failed Blushweaver. He'd failed everyone. The lifeless armies were probably already marching on Idris. Halandrin and Idris would fight, and the Pon Kal would have their revenge. It had been 300 years coming.
Vasher stood up with difficulty. He held the dueling sword in a weak hand, looking at Denth, still shaken by his use of nightblood. The empty black hallway was now open around them. Vasher had destroyed several of the walls. It was amazing the roof hadn't fallen in. Corpses littered the floor, the result of the fights when Dent's men had taken over the palace.
I'll let you die easily, Dent said, raising his blade. Just tell me the truth. You never beat Arsteel in a duel, did you?
Vasher raised his own blade. The cuts, the pain in his arm, the exhaustion of being awake so long, it was all wearing on him. Adrenaline could only get him so far, and even his body could only take so much. He didn't reply.
Have it your way, Dent said, attacking.
Vasher backed away, forced to the defensive. Dent had always been better at swordplay. Vasher had been better at research, but what had that earned him? Discoveries that had caused the many war, an army of monsters that had killed so many. He fought. He fought well, he knew, considering how tired he was. But it did little good. Denth drove his blade through Vasher's left shoulder, Denth's favorite place for a first strike. It allowed his opponent to keep fighting, wounded, and drew out the fight for Denth's enjoyment.
You never beat Arsteel,
Denth whispered.
You're going to kill me on that altar, Ciri said, standing in the strange room held by lifeless. Around her, other lifeless placed bodies on the floor. Priests. It doesn't make sense, Bluefingers. You don't follow their religion. Why do this?
Bluefingers stood to the side, holding a knife. She could see the shame in his eyes.
Bluefingers, she said, forcing her voice to remain even, her hair to stay black. Bluefingers, you don't have to do this.
Bluefingers finally looked at her.
After all I've already done, do you think one more death means anything to me?
After all you've done, she said,
Do you really think one more death will matter for your cause?
He glanced at the altar.
Yes, he said. You know how the Idrians whisper of the things that go on in the court of gods. Your people hate and distrust the Halandrin priests. They speak of murders done on dark altars in the backs of the palaces. Well, we are going to let a group of those Idrian mercenaries see this once you are dead. We'll show them that we were too late to save you, that the twisted priests had already killed you on one of their profane altars. We'll show them the dead priests we killed trying to save you. The Idrians will riot in the city. They're strained to snapping anyway. We have you to thank for that. The city will be in chaos, and there will be a slaughter the like of which hasn't been seen since the Many War, as the Halandrin kill Idrian peasants to maintain order. Those Idrians who live will return to their homeland to tell the tale. They'll let everyone know that the Halandrin only wanted a princess of the royal blood so that they could sacrifice her to their god-king. It is exaggerated and foolish to think that the Halandrin would really do such a thing, but sometimes the wildest tales are the ones best believed, and the Idrians will accept this one. You know they will.
And she did. She'd heard similar stories since her childhood. Halandrin was remote to her people, frightening, bizarre. Ciri struggled, feeling even more worried. Bluefingers glanced back at her.
I truly am sorry.
I am nothing, Lightsong thought. Why couldn't I save her? Why couldn't I protect her? He was crying again. Oddly, someone else was, too. The man in the cell next to him. The God King. Tsesebron moaned with frustration, pounding against the bars of his cage. He didn't speak, though, or denounce his captors. I wonder why that is, Lightsong thought. Men approached the God King's cell. Pon-Call men, with weapons. Their expressions were grim. Lightsong found it hard to care.
You are a god.
Larimar's words still challenged him. The high priest lay in his own cell, to Lightsong's left, eyes closed against the terrors around them.
You are a god. To me, at least.
Lightsong shook his head.
No, I'm nothing. No god. Not even a good man.
You are. To me.
Water splashed against him. Lightsong shook his head, shocked. Thunder sounded, distant in his head. Nobody else seemed to notice. It was growing dark.
What?
He was on a ship. Tossing, pitching, on a dark sea. Lightsong stood on the deck, trying to stay upright on the slick boards. Part of him knew it was simply a hallucination, that he was still back in the prison cell. But it felt real. Very real. The waves churned. Black sky ripped by lightning ahead, and the ship's motion slammed his face against the wall of the ship's cabin. Light from a pole-mounted lantern flickered uncertainly. It seemed weak compared with the lightning, which was so violent and angry. Lightsong blinked. His face was pressed up against something painted on the wood. A red panther, glistening in the lantern light and the rain. The name of the ship, he remembered. The Red Panther. He wasn't Lightsong, or he was, but he was a much smaller, pudgier version of himself. A man accustomed to being a scribe, to working long hours counting coins, checking ledgers. Seeking for lost money, that's what he'd done. People hired him to discover where they'd been cheated or if a contract hadn't been paid properly. His job was to look through the books, searching out hidden or confusing twists of arithmetic. A detective, just not the sort he had imagined. Waves crashed against the boat. Larimar, looking a few years younger, yelled for help from the prow. Deckhands rushed to his aid. It wasn't Larimar's ship, or even Lightsong's. They had borrowed it for a simple pleasure trip. Sailing was a hobby of Larimar's. The storm had come on suddenly. Lightsong lurched back to his feet, barely managing to stay up as he made his way forward, clutching the railing. Waves surged across the deck, and sailors struggled to keep the boat from capsizing. The sails were gone, only tattered shreds remaining. Wood creaked and cracked around him. Dark black water churned in the ocean just to his right. Larimar yelled to Lightsong, asking him to lash down the barrels. Lightsong nodded, grabbing a rope and tying one end to a davit. A wave hit and he skidded, almost falling over the rail into the water. He froze, gripping the rope, looking into the sea's mad, terrifying depths. He shook himself free, then tied the rope in a wide slipknot. It came naturally to him. Larimar had taken him on enough sailing trips now. Larimar called for help again, and suddenly, a young woman left the cabin and ran across the deck, grabbing ropes as if to lend assistance. "Tatara!" a woman called from the cabin. There was terror in her voice. Lightsong looked up. He recognized the girl. He reached out, rope looped in his hands. He shouted for her to go back below, but his voice was lost in the thunder. She turned to look at him. The next wave tossed her into the ocean. Larimar cried out in despair. Lightsong watched, shocked. The deep blackness claimed his niece, engulfed her, swallowed her. Such great, horrible chaos. The sea in a storm at night. He felt useless, his heart thumping with fright as he watched the young woman get swept into the churning current. He saw flashes of her golden hair twisting in the water. A weak splash of color passing his side of the ship. It would soon be gone. Men cursed. Larimar screamed. A woman wept. Lightsong just stared into the bubbling deep, with its alternating froth and blackness. The terrible, terrible blackness. He still held the rope in his hand. Without thinking, he leaped up onto the railing and threw himself into the darkness. Icy water took him, but he reached out, thrashing and churning in the tempest. He barely knew how to swim. Something passed him. He grabbed it. Her foot. He threw the loop around her ankle, somehow managing to get the knot tight despite the water and the waves. As soon as he did, a surge in the undulating water yanked him away, sucking him down. He reached upward, toward where the lightning lit the surface. That light grew distant as he sank. Down into the black deep, claimed by the void. He blinked, waves and thunder fading. He sat on the cool stones of his cell. The void had taken him, but something had sent him back. He'd returned. Because he'd seen war and destruction. The God King was yelling in fear. Lightsong looked over as the fake priests grabbed Sisebron, and Lightsong could see into the God King's mouth. No tongue, Lightsong thought. Of course, to keep him from using all that biochroma. It makes sense. He turned to the side. Blushweaver's body lay red and bloodied. He'd seen that in a vision, in the vague shadows of morning memory. He'd thought that the image had been of her blushing, but now he remembered. He looked to the side. Larimar, eyes closed as if asleep. That image had been in his dream as well. Lightsong realized the man had them shut as he wept. The God King in prison. Lightsong had seen that too.
but above it all, he remembered standing on the other side of a brilliant, colorful wave of light, looking down at the world from the other side, and seeing everything he loved dissolved into the destruction of war. A war greater than any the world had known. A war more deadly, even, than the many war. He remembered the other side, and he remembered a voice, calm and comforting, offering him an opportunity to return. By the colors, Light Song thought, standing up as the priests forced the God King to his knees, I am a god. Light Song stepped forward, moving up to the bars of his cage. He saw pain and tears in the God King's face, and somehow understood them. The man did love Ciri. Light Song had seen the same thing in the Queen's eyes. She had somehow come to care for the man who was to oppress her.
You are my king,
Light Song whispered,
and lord of the gods.
The Pan Kaw men forced the God King face down on the stones. One of the priests raised a sword. The God King's arm jutted out, his hand toward Light Song. I have seen the void, he thought, and I came back. And then Light Song reached through the bars and grasped the God King's hand. A fake priest looked up with alarm. Light Song met the man's eyes, then smiled broadly, looking down at the God King.
My life to yours, Light Song said. My breath become yours.
Denth slashed, wounding Vasher in the leg. Vasher stumbled, going down on one knee. Denth struck again, and Vasher barely managed to keep the sword away. Denth backed off, shaking his head.
You are pathetic, Vasher. There you kneel, about to die, and you still think you're better than the rest of us. You judge me for becoming a mercenary? What else was I to do? Take over kingdoms, rule them, and start wars as you did?
Vasher bowed his head. Denth growled and ran forward, lashing out with his sword. Vasher tried to defend himself, but he was just too weak. Denth knocked Vasher's weapon aside, then kicked him in the stomach, sending Vasher backward against the wall. Vasher slumped down, sword lost. He reached for a knife on the belt of a fallen soldier, but Denth stepped up and put his booted foot on Vasher's hand.
You think I should just go back to the way I was before? Denth spat. The happy, friendly man everyone loved.
You were a good person,
Vasher whispered.
That man saw and did terrible things, Denth said. I've tried, Vasher. I've tried going back. But the darkness, it's inside. I can't escape it. My laughter has an edge to it. I can't forget.
I can make you, Vasher said. I know the commands.
Denth froze.
I promise, Vasher said. I will take it all from you, if you wish.
Denth stood for a long moment, foot on Vasher's arm, sword lowered. Then finally he shook his head.
No, I don't deserve that. Neither of us do. Goodbye, Vasher.
He raised his blade to strike, and Vasher moved his arm up, touching Denth's leg.
My life to yours. My breath become yours.
Denth froze, then stumbled. 50 breaths fled from Vasher's chest and surged into Denth's body. They would be unwelcome, but he couldn't turn them away. 50 breaths, not many, but enough. enough to make Denth shake with pleasure, enough to